Well, thank you for joining us again. I am with Matt Paulson, and we're going to be talking about the seven deadly sins of first-time entrepreneurs. So, Matt, welcome, and thanks for being with us.
Absolutely. I think it's important to record this bonus because I see a lot of the same mistakes happen just over and over again. You know, I have a lot of new entrepreneurs that want to buy me lunch, buy me coffee, and just ask about business. And, you know, I say yes to most of them just because I like to help, you know, new people out. But I see a lot of the same mistakes happening over and over and over and over again. So it's hopefully if you'll, you know, take kind of these mistakes in, you'll recognize when you're about to make them and hopefully be able to avoid them.
Yeah. And you can have a more productive lunch meeting with Matt.
Yes.
Right.
So this will be required listening before you buy me lunch.
Would you like to have lunch? Yes, I will have lunch after you've listened to this and sent me a highlight from each mistake. And yes, there's seven of them. So awesome. Well, so again, seven deadly sins of first-time entrepreneurs, a bonus to Matt's book here, one of many. So let's just dive right in. The first mistake is not doing enough work to get your business off of the ground.
Yes, I think people don't recognize how much work it actually is to start a business and all of the different things that you have to do in the time frame that you have to do it in. And you have to do customer development, sales, marketing, product development, you know, operations and kind of product delivery and customer support and design and, you know, landing pages and just everything that there is to with it. Or everything that goes with it is just a lot of work, and people don't always necessarily realize how much work it is. So they do maybe 3-4 hours a week, but they, you know, if you talk to them and a few months later, they haven't really made much progress, but they're still kind of, you know, working on their product. But, you know, kind of at the rate they're going, it's going to be 2 years before they're at a place where they can sell anything. And it's just,
right, and then their products will be obsolete.
Yeah. So. And by then, you know, they'll just have forgotten about it or moved on to some other object of their desires to pursue.
Right. And I think the key words from this one are get off the ground, because what it communicates is there's a lot of work in the beginning.
Absolutely. I think, you know, when you're building out your product and, you know, before you have any customers, it's really a grind to kind of get everything done. And when you don't see any results from your efforts until, you know, you launch, it's very kind of hard to stay motivated. And I mean, you really have to kind of set kind of a hard launch date and say, I'm going to be done on this date, regardless of what happens. I need to have these things done by then, and I'm just going to make it happen. If you don't set a launch date and you just kind of work on your project a couple hours a week, you're never really going to get to a place where you're going to be able to launch.
Well, and the other way of looking at it is that, you know, when you're an airplane, you need to have a good takeoff, right? There's no real room for error on that.
Yeah.
But it might be a little wobbly.
Sure.
But it still took off, right?
I mean, when a plane takes off, it's going 300 miles an hour, not, you know, 2 miles an hour.
Right, right. And it just takes some time and a lot of effort to build up that momentum. And so maybe the gift Matt is giving you who are listening, who have bought the book and are listening to this interview, is permission to say, this is really hard and this seems like a lot of work. Yes. And yes. And that's exactly the way it's supposed to be in the beginning.
Yep. And if it were easy, not everyone would be doing that.
If you feel isolated and alone, it's because you're isolated and alone.
That's the nature of the game, but there are definitely some good rewards kind of down the line. I have a buddy that's, he's working on a course for a massage therapist or like helping them out with marketing and some products. And I've been helping him out for maybe 5-6 months on it now. And, you know, I kind of let him get off the map for a couple of months. And then I caught up with him like a week ago and I asked him, you know, how is everything coming? Are you getting ready to sell something? And the only thing he had done in 2 months is record kind of a few videos to kind of show people what he was going to teach in his course. And it's like, well, you know, at this rate, it's going to be 2016, 2017 before you have anything to sell. And by then,
we're going to have robots to do that by the time you're done, buddy.
Like by the time you're done, you know, it's going to be the marketing challenge for that business is going to be probably something different.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's another reason to launch, is that your customers will tell you what's wrong, but you won't know that until it's out.
Yep.
You know, mistake number two, worrying about problems before they're actual problems.
Mm-hmm.
This sounds kind of silly.
It does, but I mean, a lot of people think that when they address an issue like customer service or like web hosting, they need to do it in such a way that the solution that they come up with now will still be the solution that works 5 or 10 years from now. And I think when you focus on, or when you spend too much time worrying about how to solve big problems down the line, and you're not really focusing enough on kind of the more immediate issues, you end up wasting a lot of energy, you know, on things that you don't need to waste energy on. And then as a result, you're not doing the important things like marketing and sales and product development. And you also tend to waste money when you try to solve problems down the line before they're problems. If you're first getting started, you don't need a dedicated web server for $300 a month. You need a $10 a month shared hosting account with, you know, Dreamhost or Bluehost or one of those guys.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I get that people want to scale and things like that. But, yeah. You know, the other great thing is once you have some revenue, mm-hmm. you can afford to scale.
Yep. And then, you know, when you're first getting started, capital tends to be a very scarce resource. And you don't want to spend more of it than you have to on things like hosting and, you know, software as a service companies that you use for your business.
Number three is not talking to customers.
Yep.
Tell me about that.
You would think it's obvious, but there are people that will build their product and get it all the way to the point where they think it's, you know, where it needs to be in terms of a product to sell it, and they don't actually talk to their customers in the process. They think that they already know what their customers are thinking. They think that they already understand the customer's problems, but sometimes, you know, you get off the mark, then you end up doing a bunch of work that didn't need to be done because, you know, part of your product isn't necessary to solve your customers' problems.
And let me throw another one in there. Another reason people don't talk to their customers is pride.
Sure.
Is that we are afraid. Notice I said we, or yeah. just me. but we are afraid of the feedback.
Yeah.
Right? It's easier, it's more comfortable to build things in a vacuum than to say, what do you think about this? And they go, I don't really get it. And you're like, oh, crap. But wouldn't you rather hear that mm-hmm. before you put a buy now button and no one buys it ever,
yeah.
right?
Yeah, when you talk to customers, they just tend to throw kind of wrenches into your train of thought and make you reevaluate. And it's more work, but you know, at the end of the day, you end up with something that people actually want versus your perfect vision that may not line up with somebody else's perfect vision of your solution to whatever their problem happens to be.
Yeah, so your pride can be bought. Right. I mean, it's suck it up and talk to your customers and add them. Now, when you say customers, that implies that those people will eventually buy or maybe have bought something.
Sure.
What do you mean by talking to customers?
Well, I think when you first kind of have identified kind of a group of people or kind of a market that you want to sell something to, you need to find people that could potentially be your customers and ask them, you know, just say, this is kind of what I think the problem that I'm trying to solve is. You know, how would you articulate that problem? How, you know, what are your biggest pain points? What do you need? And
yeah.
They don't necessarily have to be the people that are going to buy your products, but certainly talking to customers is, you know, especially if you have kind of a higher price point product, that's a good way to kind of have a warm lead when you're going to sell your product down the line.
Yeah, and it's also important to remember that with those same customers, they may end up buying, mm-hmm. even if you show it to them. And the other thing, I've seen people not want to talk to customers because they say, oh, I don't want them to see what's in there yet because I want them to buy.
Yep.
Right. And that's sort of like saying, I want to sell you this computer, but you can't, I want to sell you this laptop, but you can't open it and start typing.
Yeah. I mean, that would be like me not showing, you know, whatever my next investment thing is going to be to five or six customers that's feedback. It's like, who cares about those five or six? There are 50,000, 100,000 more right. that haven't seen it. So it's not... Yeah.
That's a great point. It's a scarcity mindset.
Yeah.
Right. So number four is my favorite, which is waiting for permission. So I guess the question is, who are we waiting for permission from? I mean, anyone who's listening to this, I think they have an idea that's been born.
Yep.
Right. The idea is there. Are they waiting for permission to take time to build it? Are they waiting for permission to say, yes, you're actually an authority in that? Like, who are they waiting for permission from?
Sure. I think people that are starting businesses think that they need the endorsement of somebody, maybe an expert in a field, maybe it's a family member you trust, even maybe a friend that's good in business, just to say, yeah, you can go build that business. I think that would be a great idea. Or you might be kind of waiting on a piece of feedback from somebody before you kind of take the next step forward. I know there's, you know, there are the classic example of somebody will say, you know, I had emailed Pat Flynn and asked him if my business was a good idea or what piece of software I should use, but he never got back to me. So I don't know what to do. Then all of a sudden it becomes, it's not my fault that my business isn't getting off the ground. It's Pat right. Flynn's fault that he didn't right. email me back.
Yeah, or I emailed 20 people and their feedback wasn't very helpful. Well, maybe because your idea wasn't that good. Right? Yep,
and you have to expect that, you know, if you're going to ask somebody, you know, for feedback or help about your business, you shouldn't necessarily wait for them to give you a ringing endorsement and push you along. It's, you know, you have to be the one that pushes your business forward. You can't really expect anybody else to move your business forward for you.
Right. And so what I hear you saying is if you want to move it forward, as you just said there, then the first step is saying, I can do this. And I think what people fear is they want to wait for permission, wait for this endorsement. But one of the problems with that is if this was your only business you were ever going to have, then it's like, yeah, it's got to be, you got to do it right. But the reality is most people I know that are in business, they don't do one business well, they do business well, right? And so if you say, well, they didn't endorse it or I haven't gotten enough opinions, because, you know, part of this is we just said, you know, you need to talk to your customers. That's fine. But it's this hesitancy that people have to actually launch.
Sure.
Right. Or just say, I'm good at this.
Yep.
Or they go, I have to be like this person that already exists. And reality is, no, you can start to carve your own niche, but it starts very, very small.
Absolutely. I think people think that, you know, if I'm going to start a podcasting business, I need to, or if I'm going to start a podcast, that I need my podcast to be as good as John Lee Dumas's or Pat Flynn's or Michael Hyatt's before we get started. And the reality is that your first business is not going to be, it's not going to be that great.
I mean, I was just going to say, it's not going to be good.
No, I mean, I look at some of the stuff I did in like 2006 and 2007 and even like in high school and like 2003, that it's just, I look at it now, it's absolutely embarrassing. I wouldn't want to show that to anybody. But that's how you get started. You start by starting business by doing something very poorly, and eventually you learn to do it less poorly and less poorly. And then you, 5 years down the road, somebody looks at you and says, hey, Matt, you're this big expert in this thing. It's like, really?
You're like, yeah, because I hit it because I'm batting 1,000. Right?
Yes, no.
I mean, what I'm remembering, this picture I have in my head is, you ever watch This Old House?
Sure.
Okay. One of my favorite shows of all time. And, you know, they're always in New England and, you know, they're fixing up some farmhouse. And what I remember is one of my favorite sort of strings, they're fixing this farmhouse up and the foundation was just stone. I mean, stones, literally just sort of nicely stacked on top of each other. And at the time, that was the best they had.
Yep.
Right? And I just think your first business kind of looks like that. Yep. Like 20 years later, you might look at it, or 50 years later, you're like, dude, you ever heard of concrete? Mm-hmm. You know, like, you ever heard of foundation? So like, this is what I had. I had random rocks and I put them together and my house did not sink. Mm-hmm. And if it did, it just sunk a little, right?
Yep.
But that's where you just work with what you have, right? And so many people think, I'm going to look at what someone has now compared to what they, you know, what I have now. And it's really not comparable, but you have to start, right?
Yeah. I mean, you can't compare yourself to somebody who's been doing what you want to do for 3, 4, 5 years and expect that your product on day one is going to be as good as their product, you know, 3 years down the line. It's like expecting, you know, right after you get out of college that the house that you live in is exactly as good as your parents. And they've, you know, been saving for 40 years to buy the house they live in now, and you're broke, so you shouldn't expect to have the same kind of standard of living as they do.
Yeah, and I really appreciate that sort of phrasing of you're broke, because I think we're broke when it comes to experience the first time. So get some experience. Number five is building your product or service without marketing it.
Yes. So I think people will, and this ties into not talking to customers, but you know, when you're building, I mean, marketing is not the thing that you do after your product is done. Marketing is the thing that you're doing the entire time. And you should be spending as much time marketing as you are actually building out your product or service. Because when your product launches, you don't want it to launch to a group of crickets. You want people that are just waiting and waiting for you to launch so that they can buy your product on the first day that it comes out.
So building your product or service without marketing is basically, you know, don't keep yourself a secret. Right. You know, the thing I like about marketing your product while you're building it is it builds in pressure.
Yep.
If you say, this thing's coming, it's going to be great, and this is what it's going to do, people are like, great, that's awesome. But if you don't tell people that,
there's no pressure for you to launch.
You never have to ship, right? So it's healthy peer pressure.
Yeah, and it also kind of tells you whether you're onto something or not. I mean, if you're writing blog posts and you're tweeting and sharing on Facebook about kind of the area that you're working in and kind of your solution, you should be getting some kind of feedback to that. And if you're not getting anything that tells you, you might not be on the right track.
Yeah, or that's, you'll either hear, I'm dying for something like this, or that I could totally see this, or, you know, on Facebook, someone will, you know, mention someone else's name. Like, did you see this, Bob Johnson? You know, or they'll say, how is this different than this?
Sure.
I have a friend who's a financial coach, and that's the problem is, you know, he's building it. And what's the number one question? How is this different than Financial Peace University?
Absolutely.
Right. How is this different than the market leader? And he might have a really good answer for that.
Yep.
Unfortunately, he did not. Right. But you need to put it out there so that you're going to get some questions before you launch.
Yep.
So that when you launch, that's going to be part of your sales point. Yep. It's different than this in this way.
Yep. It'll be the first question on your FAQ. You know, people are going to have that question. You'll be able to, you know, knock that one out of the park so that it's not, doesn't become a stumbling block.
Yeah, we should only be afraid of objections when they're surprises.
Yes.
Objections are okay.
Yep.
When you know what they are and you're ready to deal with them. I mean, it's funny, you know, Matt and I are both married and have kids, and you know, when I have an idea in my head, one of the first things I think of is, what is my wife's objection to this going to be? And I start to go, okay, how can I overcome the objection?
Yep. Right.
No different than with your product is start to think through what are the obstacles. When you remove the obstacles between you and your customer, you know, that's why people have mobile payment apps. It removes an obstacle.
Yep.
Right.
So let's talk briefly about how you market a product before you launch.
Yeah.
So obviously building a mailing list is a big thing to do. You want to get as many email addresses of people that could potentially be your customers as possible.
Right.
So that way on day one, you can email them, and on day three or four, you can email them again and say, hey, this product is available. You should go check it out. So in order to do that, obviously you want to have some kind of website up where you're collecting email addresses and you're maybe blogging or sharing on social media about your product and just really sending as much, you're having some content there already and just sending as much traffic, you know, to your website as possible to get people kind of into your pre-launch mailing list. And certainly you can podcast and do YouTube videos and just about anything you want to get people to your website. But really, I think the key is just to get them on a mailing list and sending them content while you're building your product so that you kind of remain fresh in their mind and they're still thinking about your product and like the problem area of your product. Yeah. That way they don't forget about you. So when you send them an email on launch today, it's like, who's this guy again?
What was that thing I signed up for?
It's like, this is the thing I can't wait to buy. I'm waiting for it to come out. It's launch day. I want to buy it.
Right. And what's another mistake people make is they don't share their product. They don't market by revealing their product while it's in development.
Yep.
Meaning show me what's inside.
Sure.
Right? And like, don't show me everything, you know, but show me what I'm going to get. Again, it's really the equivalent of going to a car dealership and saying, you may look at the car, sir. What kind of? No, you may not open it. You know, you definitely cannot test drive it.
Sure.
Right? But you may look at it. Now, will you invest in this? Yep. And the answer is no.
I think
you've got to let people get inside, right?
Yeah. I think people have a fear that, you know, if I play my cards too early, that either somebody's going to copy me or they're going to look at it and say, oh, I don't need to pay money for this. This isn't worth my money. Mm-hmm. And that's just that.
It's fear.
Yeah.
It's just fear talking.
Yep. And those things rarely just don't happen.
Yeah. But I will say this, and you and I haven't talked about this sort of pre-show, but I have a friend with a very popular digital product and someone copied him. They subscribed to his product and then they went and they basically tried to duplicate it. On very similar URL as well. Use a lot of same language in selling. But here's the thing, and I said this to my friend, is he has strategic partnerships right now in place that other guy will never have.
Yeah, that guy does not have the audience or the relationships.
Absolutely not. Yep. Absolutely not. And so it looks like, oh, you're like that guy, but not as good.
Yep.
You don't want to be that guy or that gal. Oh, you're like her, but you're just not as good.
Yep.
Right? And so that's the other thing I told my friend is, you know, you started first.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the other thing. He's almost on to his next product.
Mm-hmm.
Right, it's like you said with Disney, I think is, or someone was mentioned earlier today with Disney, is by the time people were figuring out what Walt Disney was doing, they were on to the next thing.
Yep.
Right, and so that's another reason to get started now, right, is so that you can be on to the next thing by the time your competition's copying you.
Yeah, by the time somebody copies you, you'll already be out the door, and it'll take them a few months to copy you, and you know, chances are they're just not going to do it as well, or, I mean, if they just copy you know, copy you directly, you can send a lawyer after them, or, you know, do like a DMCA takedown. And there's, you know, stuff you can do, and you don't want to spend all day worrying about people copying your business, but and remedies exist if there are issues like that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And one of the remedies was, and this was great, is he sells a tutorial on a product, and he has the permission from the product mm-hmm. to use their name in the URL. Whereas if you want to do that with Evernote, it's not an Evernote product, but Evernote will not let you use Evernote in their URL
yep.
unless you have permission. Yep. And they give it to very, 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 very few.
Yep.
Okay. But this guy has permission. So the guy that copied him used the name of the company in the URL. And I said, hey, man, just reach out to your buddies there and say, hey, this guy's copying and he doesn't have your endorsement.
Yep.
And let the company handle it.
Yeah, it goes back to, you know, the trademark issue. You, as a company, you have to protect your trademark, and when other people use it and they're not supposed to, they have to, you know, you have to go after it. So that whoever the company is, whether it's Evernote or Scrivener or whoever, you know, they have to go after the other person. Otherwise, they lose their trademark.
Yeah, absolutely. And that goes back to relationship.
Yep.
This guy has a great relationship with the company because mm-hmm. he's selling a bunch of the product for him.
Yep.
You know, it's a win-win. So, build your... number five mistake was building your product or service without marketing. And great stuff. Number six, we got two more, shiny object syndrome and grass is greener syndrome.
Yeah, I mean, they're the same thing, but it's basically that people will start building businesses and then they'll kind of get stuck in the weeds. And then off in the distance, they'll say, oh, there's this other business I could start. And that if I did that business, I could do this, this, and this that I couldn't do with this business that I've already started. So maybe I should stop doing this and go doing that. But people that tend to do that, they never finish any of their projects. They just keep jumping from thing to thing to thing to thing. And then they end up with a whole bunch of half-finished projects. And
yeah, and I would say maybe some of them do finish, but they never maximize.
Sure.
I mean, that's the other piece of this is maybe you did it, but you didn't take the lessons you learned and reapply them, which is in a book, Lewis Schiff, I think is the guy's name, but he wrote Business Brilliant. He talks about one of the measures or trademarks of a really truly successful business owner is that they take their failure and they reapply it.
Sure.
Right.
And if you don't give yourself the chance to fail, you're not going to learn those lessons.
Right. And if you fail a lot. So number one is if you don't ship, you don't get a chance to fail. And if you do fail and you walk away, you didn't get the chance to improve.
Yep.
I mean, it's the equivalent of you and I walking on a basketball court for the first time, shooting a ball, missing and saying, well, guess we weren't supposed to play basketball.
Yeah.
Right.
Absolutely. I think, you know, especially when you start stuff and you don't finish it, all of that work tends to be wasted because, one, you don't learn about it. Two, you don't end up using it. It's, you know, I think you really need to commit to kind of one idea at a time and, mm-hmm. you know, sure, spend a few weeks or even a month or two really kind of honing in on the one thing that you want to do. But then you have to really get on a rocket ship and just go in that one direction and not get distracted along the way by a bunch of different other things.
Yeah. Our mutual friend, Dan Miller, says you got to burn the ships,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, you land and you say, boys, we can't go back because we burned the ships.
Yep. So we're going to get it done.
We're going to get it done. Yep. Right. Mistake number seven of these seven mm-hmm. Is trying to build a product for everyone.
Sure.
What is wrong? I want everyone to buy my product, Matt.
No, you don't.
That's true. I did recently tell some customers I don't like them.
Well, I mean, you can't expect to build a product that are for very different types of people. Mm. I mean, I have a product that's for individual investors that pick their own stocks, and that tends to be men who are between 40 and 70 and have some money.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to also try to make that product for women that are 30 years old and have two kids at home and can barely scrape a couple of dimes together.
Right.
Because if I try...
Or just don't have any interest.
Yeah. Right? It's like, if I try to make the product for them as well, you know, the original group of people I was targeting, I won't solve their problems at all. Mm. I mean, the reality is you're not the Coca-Cola company. You can't build a product that everyone's going to like. You only have a limited amount of resources, so you have to use those in such a way that you're building something that a group of people will like, even if everybody doesn't get value from it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Everybody is not a good business plan.
No.
Right. Right. Well, that's been the seven deadly sins of first-time entrepreneurs. And the good news is that you now, you don't have to sin. You don't have to experience any these. And, you know, remember that naturally we're drawn towards these. Naturally we're drawn to these mistakes. Mm-hmm. And so now you're not ignorant. The first step of preventing is to be aware. And so, Matt, I'll give you the last word, but that's been the seven deadly sins of first-time entrepreneurs. Anything you want to close this with?
Sure. I think, you know, these mistakes that people make are very common. And I think the most important thing to do is to recognize that you're making those mistakes when you're making them. And, you know, if you take the time to recognize that you're not working hard enough or you're waiting for permission for somebody or you're not talking to customers, you know, if you realize that, then you have the opportunity to kind of make a course correction and avoid that mistake before you really suffer the consequences from it. So just kind of remember what they are while you're building your business. And if you see yourself making one of those mistakes, just stop making that mistake and do what you're supposed to be doing and working on your business.
Awesome. Thank you, Matt. And thank you, folks, for listening.